Hello, everyone. It's Mary Lou Tyler. I have a great guest for us this week. We are focusing a lot of our effort lately on the sales conversation and what we can do as professionals to improve the results for our clients and prospects. So the conversation has a lot to do with how we phrase it, how we frame it, when we're talking with people, how we're talking with people. And I had the opportunity to get in connection with a gentleman by the name of Michael Hagelow. He's written a book that I think you guys are going to love. It's called Live from Cupertino, How Apple Used Words, Music, and Performance to Build the World's Best Sales Machine. Now, some of you who've known me for a long time know that I love that term, sales machine. So when I heard the title of the book, I had to have Michael on as a guest. Now, Michael spent 22 years with Apple. He started as a systems engineer, like most of us on the engineering side who have crossed over into the sales area. But he's been in the sales area for quite some time. He's generated nearly $1 billion in revenue, but he's a musician. So what he's done is he's written a book for us that talks about the sales process and the sales conversation as it relates to music, the rhythm of music, the way we rehearse and practice and perfect our craft. And it's aligned very nicely with what I've been teaching and I've been asking you all to consider as we go along here from the recipient's point of view, what we can do or say or demonstrate that provides them with enough information so that they know in their heart they're getting superior benefits and results from us. Without further ado, I'd like to present Michael Hagelow. I mean, I'm a music lover. So, and I am an engineer. I'm actually a computer software engineer. And I think the two go hand in hand, music and programming. So
very much so.
That's probably what got me interested at first when I heard the, you know, how Apple used words, music, and performance to build the world's best sales machine. Plus, the term sales machine is another way we bond because basically, the book Predictable Revenue is about the, you know, $100 million sales machine of Salesforce.com, how we were able to move them from kind of a mom and pop flower shop CRM vendor to enterprise level.
I get it. And doing my homework there, you know, that I get that and I understand that. And, you know, for what Salesforce did for, if you will, it's funny, we never had a CRM at Apple. We wrote our own, particularly in the education side, because people didn't understand our methodologies. You know, we didn't have a massive call center. We weren't fielding calls. And people weren't calling us, believe me. So I watched a couple of your videos and then you mentioned the fact that you dealt with 25 pair cables, and I'm like, oh my God, I started as a networking engineer at Apple. I'm like, 25 pair cables. I can pretty much still fan it and punch it down, but nobody needs it anymore because we do it all over a piece of glass. And I thought it was cute that you were saying people were having a tough time understanding how they're getting their data and their call and everything across two wires. And you do realize that today's day and age that some people would look at you and go, of course it's two wired. It isn't even a wire anymore. Why are you saying that?
No, it's not a wire.
So the world has changed in a very short time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel very fortunate to have been a part of that analog world, you know, because the impact of doing business in an analog world to the way you do your workflow in a digital world is priceless, I think. You know, I came up through the ranks of direct mail, through contact and call centers. So the use of the phone, the use of letters, being able to write where you had to worry about hard dollar expense to mail a letter and stick a stamp on it. Whereas now with email, people create not so great sales conversations because
I interviewed some people for a startup I was with, and you know, this individual came in, she was 26 years old, and on her LinkedIn profile had 129 different skills she checked off. I'm thinking, you can't have that many. So let's just go through a test here. Write an intro letter, and, you know, good night, thanks for playing. That was the end of the interview. So I'm with you, and I think that's something that's really critical that I wrote about extensively, is that we work so hard. You know, sales and marketing at Apple were a partnership. There wasn't a sales and there wasn't a marketing. I was invited to every one of their events. They were invited to every one of ours. And we really turned over every single individual word that was used to evoke some meaning, just like you would do if you were writing lyrics. You don't have time in a lyric to read War and Peace.
Right.
You've got to get to the emotion. You've got to get to the essence in two or three phrases. Because in today's world, in seven-second listening, you lose people pretty quickly. So where's the catch? What are people in the marketing side doing to bring folks to the table? And then when you go in and you're face-to-face, and if you step all over yourself, well, then all that work is out of the way. It's for nothing. So it was a very purposeful title. I chose the music, again, making music analogy. Mainly there are lots of arts and crafts types folks that are enjoy the Apple platform, and I was speaking to them, and I'm speaking to others and trying to give them a sense that they can understand, and maybe a sense of the obvious. So that's where it came from. I've looked through online your two works, but have not had the opportunity to read them, but I will. I seem like an interesting cat for developing that pipeline, which we all know is so very, very important. I'm a little away from the pipeline. I took 26 sales training classes in my time, and I can't remember but one. So I'm not a big one for quote systems. But at the early flow in, I think it's critical, and that's what Salesforce brought. They brought order and organization to folks that didn't have it, to say the least. And today, I mean, you couldn't live without knowing everything about your customer, because guess what? They know everything about you. So,
Well, they do if they are inquiring, but there's also three additional levels of awareness where they don't know about you yet, and that's where I specialize, in the areas where they're not thinking about you, they're not aware, they have a problem, they don't see anything out there or think about that this may be something that they want to consider. And those are the people that I like to reach, are the, you know, unaware people sort of, you know, chaotically running around doing their thing and not thinking of systemization, optimization, measurement, and testing, certain things that they're working on. So I like that crowd, because we have to really fabricate a sales conversation that causes people to really lean in to say, wow, I never thought of it that way. Or, gee, how do they do that? That sounds really interesting. So we're really working on the triggers, emotional triggers, of curiosity, flattery, all the things that get people, depending on the persona, of course, but things that get people interested, things that catch my attention, things that cause me to skip a step because I turn around and look because something got my eye. That's what I like to do, is try to figure out how to get that to happen. And
it
I
is,
think
it,
your words and things, and I'm so interested in hearing, where do you think this thing of yours fits in the physical location in the pipeline? Where do we start with Michael's work?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I want to. I've been asked this on 50 different interviews so far, and each and every time, which is characteristic of me, I'm adjusting this to the audience on the other end. And that's the musician in me.
Right.
You know, you don't go out on stage and play jazz when the crowd wanted blues. It ends up being a bad evening for the both of you. So, you know, I don't give, although I speak of pipeline, and we had one, and we managed it as a sales force every Friday, I, in the book, did not focus on those aspects. I focused on the art, the the soft-spoken pieces of why we were successful. And you've got to say that in my personal selling career of the 22 years, I was only involved with one organization. You know, I haven't had multiple exposure. That's why when I left, I went on a purposeful journey of 1 year stints, just so I would get other, you know, back my 2 years at Adobe, did the second largest deal in their history. Was very different than doing hardware, doing services. So where I fit in is clearly at, to use terms, the B2B level, face-to-face, the senior level call, in my former world, the chancellor, the president of the institution, the president of the university, the provost, the deans, the people that the mechanics of the deal are not important. The results of it are everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when one structures something at that level, in the $10, $20, $50, $100 million range, in a Series B that we closed at $60 million, when you're in that level of number, process is not important. Matter of fact, process gets in the way.
Right.
One has to, I spoke of the one sales training that mattered. It was an improv sales training. It wasn't even sales. Mm-hmm. It was just a theater company that did improv. Is the ability to read the customer, ability to read the situation, to read the audience. And this was something that Steve did masterfully, and I observed and wrote in the book on how,
right,
how that happens, how all those pieces come together and move. I moved a president from a president of the university from no to we're going to do this all across the entire campus with just a little bit of nuance pickup.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on, and then, you know, that's the antenna one has to have up. You're not capturing that in a customer call. And God knows the phone conversations are critical, and the letter follow-up is even more critical, and the emails have to be perfect, and all those pieces of the puzzle have to be right. But you're not getting the nuance of it, the musicianship, if you will, without that face-to-face. So I'm the face-to-face person, and I just think that everything people buy from people, you know that, and it's a critical part of if you're doing widgets, that's a different story. But in my category, in what turned us from near out of business in 1998, from a 2 weeks away from closing the doors, as Michael Dell said, they should just sell the company, give the money back to the shareholders. You know, from that to today is a musical journey.
Mm-hmm. No, this is great, because I think a lot of what we do in life, especially where I am, is strategy, but strategy applied to process.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's great. One should have that. Definitely, you can't go. So you can't do what I describe without that,
mm-hmm,
because then you're just shooting in the wind, right? You have to have it. And today's data-driven world, even more so. But it's that, you know, having great musicians who know how to play, putting them in a row, doesn't turn out to be orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
It's having the conductor. It's having the right piece. It's having the expertise. It's having that drive and giving that drive to your player such that they're going to give you that one little bit more. And that's where magic is. It's Sony had all the pieces of the iPod long before Apple. All the pieces, every one of them, including the music catalog, BMI. But they couldn't put it together. They had no orchestration. They had no conductor. They had plenty of systems that probably knew all of it, but they couldn't put it together. And that art, that putting it together, that essence of Apple is what's in the book.
So, Michael, you're a musician, obviously. I'm a musician. a lot of growing up.
Well, I'm semi-retired, so just because it's weird to be my age and be on stage still, okay?
Yeah, but once a musician, always a musician.
And I'm a drummer, so I'm even odder.
What we're taught early on is practice, strategic, focused practice. So how does that concept apply to the concept in your book? And also, some people, I recall growing up, being a person who was accepted to Juilliard at an early age. And I remember watching some of the workshops where they practiced just one area of music over and over and over again. What applies to the sales conversation here in mastering that and understanding the nuances in working that muscle so that you can recognize when there's a shift? How does one practice that? Or how do you equate that in the book?
So chapter one is a rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? Practice. I mean, what's the old joke? How to get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice.
Yes.
I've actually been asked that many times when I lived in New York. In that case, I did give them the proper directions, depending on where they were. They still looked lost. but it's just life. And they say, never mind, I don't go on a tangent about New York. We are actually friendly. We just don't have time to chat, people. Just understand that. Because if I miss this train, I got to wait 20 minutes on the subway platform. It's unpleasant. Let's move on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, rehearsal and practice. So one thing that I'm going to say that might blow people's minds is the fact that at Apple, you needed to know your products inside and out. If you were at a sales conference and our then VP in his, quote, sales talk at the end of the conference walked up to you and said, Michael, tell me about X. It better be smooth and well put together, not a repeat. And here's an important part. As a fellow musician, I think will appreciate this. It isn't that you pick up a piece of Beethoven and you play it. It's that you pick up a piece and you play it as you.
Mm-hmm.
There's a nuance.
Mm-hmm.
We aren't rote memory repeating machines. We are humans that add our own zest to everything we say. At least we should if we're salespeople. And rehearsal gets you the basics and the tools and the fundamentals. Practice gets you the opportunity to put those together in a message. A really great practice lets you adapt that message to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
That's the cycle.
But you're presented, in many cases, when you're starting out, with the music, the notes, how to play the notes, how much emphasis to put on the notes, what notes to play. If you're in a company that doesn't have that level of structure, how does one go about even starting to put together the conversation, to practice the conversation?
So you do, as a person who converted from technology, from technical to sales, like I
mm-hmm.
did,
mm-hmm.
You do this, I think, through careful observation of the greats. You got to be around them. This is a little problematic in our gig economy, where you're answering calls at home, you know, via some system that's delivering them to you, and you're never around others, right? You're not in that call center anymore, because now all the calls are going to your own home or cellular device, right? And you're answering mm-hmm. you're answering your work call while you're 75 miles an hour down the interstate. That I don't have a solution for, because I still think that the get-togethers are quite, the jam sessions are quite important, particularly for salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did it through observation. I don't know that I have a formula for that, mm-hmm. but I did it through careful observation of others, good, bad. I would go on every call I could with the two reps that I was supporting, and just relentlessly listening. And from that, one thing about great salespeople that I've met is that they know themselves. They know that, hey, I'm not good at this or I am good at that. And I quickly figured out I needed to understand my own self in this context, not in a music context. I knew, hey, I can play this. I don't want to play that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I had to understand it in the business context when I transitioned to the business world. And when I got, and only through observation and asking. So when we did reviews, I said, I don't want to see the standard line written in my review. Tell me what I'm doing wrong. Spend time on that. Work with me on how I get better. Don't tell me, don't placate me. Tell me what's wrong. And watching others. And then I am a voracious, always have been, researcher. So I was fortunate to be in higher education. I was in the university marketplace. So I was surrounded by people with lots of letters behind their names. So I can tell you that I knew emotional intelligence before it was even cool. I knew by my own customer. But and one thing I've found, and this I do it to this day, I always start by, I know what I know. Tell me what you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this has opened up enlightenment for me. Have I adopted all of those ideas, theories, theorems, practicums? No. But I think it's critical for especially field people to keep a broad knowledge base. I don't necessarily mean you've got it, again, back to music. You know, if you're a percussionist, you don't have to be able to go through an entire Beethoven sonata perfectly. But you have to have enough to know that you can stay communicative with it. I mean, I can tell you when I played concert, my most feared instrument is the triangle. I am scared to death of the triangle. And people go, why? I say, you know why? I only get one chance. There's no follow-up on the triangle, folks. No follow-up. There's no second note. So in that situation, that is pressure to the max of a sales situations for $100 million deals aren't that tough because you're interacting, right? You can take a breather and have a coffee and sit down and build up a different relationship and ask about the kids and be interested. I know what I know. I want to know what you know. So this is what I saw from greatness. This is how I developed it. And this is how then you take rehearsal. You take rehearsal into performance.
Right.
And I'm a 100% believe that the only way to great selling is through practice, practice, practice. And again, it's not getting up there with rote memory reading spec sheets. I mean, good grief. If I ever read a spec sheet, I would shoot myself probably. I mean, I'm not interested in – if you're doing product number, product ID and price, you will be replaced. That's not selling. That's just fulfilling. So, you know, this is a – there are 10 chapters. And all of them are distinctive in their mechanics, but together they are the melody, they are the magic, if you will. And I said that, I think I told you at the beginning, I had two failed manuscripts. I mean, it was very difficult to get the essence out. And just like it's great, it's difficult to get the essence out of great music. But once you get there, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, what you said is so encouraging to my audience of listeners in the sense that there are a lot of former technical / engineering / non-traditional sales executive persons listening to this podcast. And we all are a little intimidated by the charismatic outlier who just, you know, sways into the conversation.
Yeah, I was a support engineer for one of those. I know exactly what you mean. I mean, everybody loved Ray. Oh my gosh, right. Ray was just, and then my other one was the technical type, the nuts and bolts, knew everything. he could give you a 25 pair color count if you want, and don't ask, I can't. And many people listening are probably going, oh, what's he talking about? But it'll be you and I, it'll be our secret. They'll never know. They will never know. They probably don't even know that word analog yet. They're still thinking that that's, I don't know, bad TV or something.
Yeah, but, or 1A2 equipment. Like, what? What's that?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, wow. Now, any moment now, I'm going to see blinking lights on my phone, I have to punch in. So we're not going rotary dial here, are we? Are we going rotary?
Maybe.
Are we going rotary?
Could be.
At some point, someone's listening to this, and they're going to tune in right out. Are we going rotary? And they're going to go, ooh, different podcast.
Oh, wrong podcast. Yeah. This can't be Mary Lou's podcast. Oh, no. Yeah.
You know, the supporting that charismatic, but the funny thing about the charismatic one, at least one of my early ones, was he deep in a product or no? So, but what did he have? He did have that ability to get the appointment because everybody loved him. And he genuinely loved others. He wasn't can I put you in this car tonight? And he's the one, and I wrote about him in the book, that I would go into his hotel room when we were on the road, hey, Ray, let's get going. And he'd have a CD-ROM or CD player set up with little speakers. And I'm like, what are you doing? He says, I always listen to music before a presentation. I want to get into a zone.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm a musician. I'm thinking, okay, whatever. You know, I'm hoping that I get paid tonight, you know, as a musician, you know. I was like,
right.
And I never understood it till later, what was he doing? He's relaxing his mind. Why? Mm-hmm. From a mindfulness professor I talk with, because that's actually proven that synapses will reconfigure and you will get deeper and better new thoughts when your mind's relaxed. That's why I wrote a blog post that's been quite well picked up where I said I get my best ideas in the shower, and here's why. Mm-hmm. And people, because what am I? I'm relaxed. Right. So when you couple him with the super technical, which I had, Craig, mm-hmm. Craig was a wild one. He was super. The guy knew everything. And if you, and to your audience, if you can become that amalgam of both, mm-hmm. if you can take your, that you don't have to be super cool charisma, but you have to have a little personality in today's day and age. People are all looking for interaction. They don't get it. If you give them some respectful interaction, you'd be surprised. And also know what you're talking about, you'll go far. And that's kind of where we were as a sales culture, the 30 or so of us in higher education. And remember, my customers taught everyone else's customers, because mine were professors and people in higher education. Those are who my customers were.
Right.
And so bending the other thing is they never left their jobs. They were there for a life. So bending the truth wasn't something that worked out. And that's the same on stage. I mean, if you're just playing covers and you're not into what you're doing, it shows. I mean, that lounge lizard kind of, no disrespect to lounge lizard musicians, but, you know, it's there's no life there. There's a reason that's a guy in a green plaid leisure suit and a piano has nobody listening to him or her.
Right. I mean, like you say in the book, you've got to feel it in your bones and in your gut.
You do.
I remember reading that somewhere. Yes.
You do. And people,
really do.
You know, people slight that. They, I really feel it. I'm doing this for a job. Yeah, that true selling is not just a job. It's a lifestyle. No, we're all selling.
What you said before, too, about you've got to love your client. Love
you
your prospect. Totally, just like your dog or cat loves you, that's how you have to be with your clients and your prospects, each and every one of them.
You are so right. You are so right. And whether you are connecting with them on the phone or connecting with them in person, if you really do know what you know but want to know what they know, if you really are engaged, and that's more than just sending them a card on their birthday. Okay, that's great, and there's nothing wrong with that. And and I'm a fundraiser today in a higher education institute, and we do those kind of things. But people know that I am truly interested in what they have to say. And I've had many in my former life sales calls where we never talked about the product.
Right.
Never. We talked about problems and solutions and ways, you know, and the product. You know, I make this statement in the book, and I've had a lot of controversy over it, a lot of pushback. My statement is simple. Steve Jobs was not an innovator at all.
Mm-hmm.
And people are like, what are you talking
what?
About?
How can you say that?
I said,
that?
Steve was a master salesman. He
yeah.
took you to a new place that you didn't even know you wanted to go. And when mm-hmm. you got there, conveniently his products were there.
Right.
And, that,
and he did steal the Apple. You know, I worked at Xerox on the Star Systems, which is the precursor to the Apple.
Oh, my God. Park. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
now,
Xerox
I
Park.
Understood we just got a mouse from you guys. I didn't know
oh,
that you
no,
got
no,
the...
No,
you no,
stole
that's right. We
all
did get the GUI
interface. You stole
that's
the GUI interface.
Right.
I worked on that at the, in the that. Early 80s. Yeah. So he was the
oh,
master.
Oh, my gosh. I was not involved. I did not. I joined in 89.
Okay,
I was.
You.
We were still. We were well under our way by that time. But you know this. Yeah, it's funny. You bring this up because in a lot of ways, disruptive evolution, disruptive revolution, is oftentimes led by time and place. You think mm-hmm. of companies like Uber. Well, I'm lived. Quite a while in New York City. I know the taxi system well. There's no problem. Let's face it. That what Uber ended up being is whatever marketing spin is. There's still a very effective taxi system that uses a wonderful platform that wasn't around 20 years ago.
Right.
So the you know the evolution. I mean USB. Everybody knows what USB is. Universal Serial Bus. Everybody knows it. Apple's the one who got it from Intel and said we're going to popularize this because nobody's making peripherals for our things called the Mac anymore, and we're going to be out of business. So let's universalize the entire interface so that everybody can make stuff universal, and well, the rest is history. So you know I don't know that time and place of Park and that time and place in the Valley and the time and place that it was what it was, but I think that, at least from my perspective, the company did a really good job of, at least the the latter part of the company, not some of the initial part, but of popularizing and putting words and understanding around why do I need a graphical user interface? What will that do for me? Mm-hmm. Why do I want, why, here's why you want to carry 2,000 songs in your pocket.
Yeah.
Here's why you want to carry a full computer in your pocket that has 2,000 songs and a web interface. And we'll call it, I don't know, an iPhone.
Yeah.
And that's part of the orchestration chapter. That's mm-hmm. part of bringing everything together in really great harmony, music,
yeah.
melody. I mean, you know, we can you and I could use technical terms. The audience might not get it, but that is when you walk out of where you are listening to something and go, "Wow, I feel it in my bones,"
mm-hmm.
and that right there is. Yeah. The mystique of Apple. We were able to make you feel it.
Yeah.
And when you can get
raving
your customers
fans.
To do that, and mm-hmm. and that doesn't mean, like, I won't mention any other CEOs who currently are running around wearing black turtlenecks and think they're the next Steve. Look, guys, you're never going to be that. Be who mm-hmm. you are. Don't worry
yeah.
about being him.
Yeah.
Don't worry
yeah.
about being a college dropout. You know, mm-hmm. be who you are. Which I always think is fun because the black turtleneck thing and well, who was, what was it? Theranos? What was she? I forget her name offhand. But, you know, the black Theranos, she was going to be the female Steve. Yeah, unfortunately,
right.
the product she was selling didn't do what it said it was going to do. I mean, we were, you know what? We were okay. And I said it many times to customers. Hey, go buy something else. I'm not right for you.
Right.
And they'd look at you and go, what, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. You're supposed to convince me to buy this. I'm going to know, because you're going to go away and go, look what he did to me. And I'm not doing that.
No, if it's not a good fit, that we teach that a lot, to be able to walk away. Or if you have the relationships, perhaps suggest another alternative that might better fit their needs, that they can go and explore on their own time. But we're really about providing a quality experience and beyond extraordinary experience for the people with whom we think we have a good fit.
See, and you said the word that in your description, I get it, how deep that means to you, relationship. Now, a lot of people gloss right over, we have a relationship management system. Like, I don't know many systems that manage relationships. They manage data. And then from that, we can generate relationships.
Yeah.
But there's the key there. You have a relationship, or should foster a relationship, no matter how you connect with the customer. And especially in today's somewhat capricious world, with regards to, the relationships seem to be very disposable, and they're not. The humankind is built on that. The when I'd sit down and move somebody from a PC to a Mac, it usually took an hour or so. And when you saw them, the light went on when they got it, right? When they started understanding, when they started self-direction, started really producing their own, that human connection. I have today customers that were, as I told some the other day, associate professors who are now provosts of the second largest universities in the state. And today I walk by the office and they say, come in and talk to me about whatever's cool, Michael. And the last time I saw this individual, before I had left Apple, he said, I bought an iPod for my wife. She's learning Spanish off of it. I bought an iPod for myself. And, I'm not still learning. And I looked at him and said, it may not be the iPod's fault. Of course, he threw me out of the office quickly at that point in time. But but we had a strong relationship. And was he an entry in a CRM? Absolutely. Were there call notes? Absolutely. Were there details? Absolutely. You can't not do that. That is that is the foundation for the mechanics for building that real relationship. And I just think that's an important part. I mean, I actually have quite a bit about CRM in the book, because it was painful for a lot of shoot at the hip, kind of shoot from the hip, reps who didn't want structure.
Right.
What they were really saying is they didn't want you to see what they were doing.
Or they leave me alone. I bring my numbers in. This is how I do it. I can't be replicated in any way, shape, or form. So don't even try.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the outlier, if you will. But I am a big proponent of understanding from a structural point of view what the outlier does, and then from that creating a rhythm around it, and then building it into the soul of the actual reps that don't necessarily feel they have that type of flow rhythm in their body, and learning.
It's brilliant. I mean,
first
it's
of all,
exactly.
Adapting.
Mm-hmm. It's exactly what I say. For instance, I say in the book, I'm not a big believer in goals. And they're like, what? I'm a believer in systems, because goals are a part of systems. And that's exactly what you just described, was get those superstars and build that systemically, so that your next superstar, who might not be a superstar at the moment, can be birthed.
Yes.
That next musician who needed just a little bit more work can go, wow, did you see what they did or where they went with that? So it's just different terminology, but I've always been a proponent of individual goals. Do X, do Y, do Z. Those goals, once they're achieved, now what? I mean, what do I do with them? What I want are systems. Where goals are a component of.
Exactly. And right now in this day and age, we have the tools to be able to record people, to get them on video with our phone, to record their audio, to transcribe the audio right on our phone. Mm-hmm. You know, all of these tools to get better and to improve and to feel more confident are at our fingertips now.
Yeah.
So why not spend the time to do this with all of our people and get them up to the point where they're all confident, comfortable, and can perform at their best, really.
Right. Well, that's the modern day following the great reps around. You know, as was my only option. And there's plenty of resources, and this is the part of back to rehearsal, and this is the part of making yourself a better player, if you will.
Right.
Making yourself a better musician, making yourself
do the impromptu, because I can tell you how many times things turned, and you know, if you're in front of somebody sitting across from them, and we're on a do this, do that, and don't have any sense of the moment, then things can go awry very quickly.
Yeah,
it's like the car buying experience at times. I mean, they seem to be very systemic. No disrespect to folks who work in the car industry. I'm just a consumer. I'm on the other side of it, and it seems that when you take them a little off, at least the junior ones, the very young ones at it, take them off track a little with a different something that's not in the in the call list, right? What do you mean? And it's a frustrating. It seems to be one of the last things that technology hasn't touched, but I guess they're trying with order direct from the factory and those kind of things. So off
they're
track here,
time.
Sorry.
No, that's
off
okay.
Track.
I do want to be respectful of our audience time and mention the book. The book's name is Live from Cupertino, How Apple Used Words, Music and Performance to Build the World's Best Sales Machine. Michael,
indeed.
Thank you so much for taking the time to visit with us today. The book is available on Amazon now, correct?
It is. Anywhere you buy books.
Okay. Anywhere you buy books. There you go. I very much appreciate you taking the time to educate us. This is such a great topic and one that's very timely because of the way things are in life right now. We are craving relationships. We have the ability to do things at scale, but every once in a while, you want to take it down a notch and build those important relationships. May not be scalable, may be scalable depending on where you are and what you sell. But at the heart of all this and the heartbeat is really loving the person on the other, you know, what I say, belly to belly at the other side of the table from you, and understanding where they're coming from to become a better salesperson.
You're 100% right. And to your book, it becomes predictable. If you do those kind of things, you'd be surprised. We are fairly predictable animals. And as somebody who started life looking for applause, you get where you really want to please. And when you get to that point, the magic happens. Hey, it has been fun.
Yeah.
What do you play? Just quickly, what do you play?
I play the oboe, and I also play piano.
Okay, so you only need one oboe in a band, just so you know. Just so you know.
I know, yeah. I have a piano at my house, and my kids are all there. They all kind of dabble, and my brother is a bass guitarist. He was the 11th hour, 59th minute of getting into Gwen Stefani's band back in...
Oh, wow.
8 to 10 years ago. It was like the high and the low of his life all within a span of 5 hours or something like that.
Well, I don't talk about the highs and lows, and thank God there weren't any pictures back in the late 70s. We'll just leave it at that.
There you have it. Michael, again, thank you so much. Take care.
Enjoy. Bye-bye.